This week on It's So Bad, Godzilla raids again.
Welcome, Chris, Michael. To the podcast.
Michael, hello.
You're back again. We're back here. My name is Mike, and we are adding this week what game to the endless list?
Gojira-kun Kaiju Dai Kessen. Godzilla for the Game Boy as it was released in America in 1990. Or, you know, translated, Godzilla Giant Monster Battle.
And where can you find the podcast, this podcast known as It's So Bad?
Oh, I'm doing all the hosting duties. So you can find it on Podbean, Stitcher, Google Podcast, formerly known as Google Play, right? Yeah, there we go. iTunes, Spotify, have you put this on Amazon Music yet?
I think so. I think you can do Alexa if you say, Alexa, play It's So Bad, the podcast.
Have you done the...
just screwed up somebody.
Have you done the the YouTube extension as well?
No, I have not done YouTube because of legal concerns, to be honest with you and the listener.
No. Oh, that's... Well, Michael has priors. So that's trying to stay off the grid a little bit. But there's some other ones. So for background as to how I know all these podcast catchers, because obviously like most people only use one podcast catcher, seeing that we are talking about a Godzilla game, I think I will plug the fact that I am the co-host of a Godzilla podcast known as The Podcast from Odo Island, where you can find us in all the very similar platforms, including YouTube, although most of our episodes don't really seem to upload to YouTube as of late. Trying to figure that out, but whatever. So that's where you can find It's So Bad and the podcast from Odo Island.
Yeah, Odo Island. That's the name of the podcast, from Odo Island. It is the premier Godzilla ranking podcast where they rank the movies in wrestling terms, main eventers.
All the way down to jobbers.
Mid-carders.
All the way down to jobbers, yeah.
What's a jobber movie? Have you guys had one? Because I don't think I've ever heard you say jobber movie.
We have. We've had not many. And, you know, there are, you know, what those rankings differ between myself and my co-host. But for me, jobber movies are Godzilla 1998, as well as Godzilla X Megaguirus, which was the movie that came out after Godzilla 2000, the Millennium series. I hate that movie. Hate it with a passion.
There was one recently that you had. You just interviewed Shin Robjira a couple weeks ago, but you had an episode recently that you guys both did not like that movie, and it was 100% not a jobber. I forget what it was. Oh, Godzilla versus Megaguirus. I think I listened
to that. That was a jobber for me. That's my least favorite Godzilla movie in the Toho franchise outside of the Godzilla 98 movie. So it's not just like cliche to hate the Godzilla 98 movie. That's just, there's a lot of problems with that movie. You can listen to the podcast on that, but I digress.
Matthew Broderick is great, though.
I know, but there's some Emmerich and Devlin just mean-spirited stuff in there, like taking potshots at like Roger Ebert while he's like dealing with cancer because he gave like one of your movies a bad review. Mean-spirited stuff going on in that movie.
Oh, so. Boy. And you can find out more about these movies on the podcast from Odo Island. Just want to, again, rep that. But you could also follow us just in case. And I just want to apologize for people last week. We had some tech issues that haven't happened in 101 episodes where we lost somebody's, the file for my audio on my computer, which has never happened, which is crazy. But we lost that for Alien Isolation. So we're going to re-record that episode and put it out relatively soon, but this week we are covering Godzilla for the Game Boy / Gojira-kun, as it's known in Japan, which is a game from 1990, October of 1990, for originally for MSX, ported to the Game Boy, developed by Compile. Chris, do you know anything about Compile?
Yes, and so to clarify, or to add to what you said, the MSX version did come out in October of 1990. The U.S. Game Boy version, which is significantly different than the version of the game that we're going to be reviewing today, also came out in October 1990, but the Japanese version that we played, and in my opinion, the superior version, was released in December 18th, 1990 in Japan. So I don't know.
Weird. Why did it come out later in Japan?
So I don't know. I don't know if that was like supposed to be... I don't know. I could not find a reason as to like why it came out 2 months later, but... as we'll get into, there's a number of differences between the American version and the Japanese version. The Japanese version definitely has a lot more polish to it than the American version that was released on the Game Boy. But we'll get to that. So,
So Compile, they, if people are not familiar with them, they've made a lot of really good games. So they made Zanuck for the NES. They've made Govelius for the Master System, which is a game I want to play after this podcast relatively, maybe probably in the next year. It's kind of like a Zelda clone.
For the Master System. Not to get sidetracked, but a mutual friend of ours who's never been on the podcast, who did not have a lot of video games growing up, like, he had that video game and he like loved it, and he like has always said he wants to do it for this podcast. So maybe we can make that happen in the near future. I've never played it. I would like to play it.
Compile also made Ghostbusters for the Master System. They made Alest, that series, which is, I believe, a shooter series. It's a shooter series. They made Alien Crush for the TurboGrafx, which is one of the premier pinball games on any video game system. They also made Blazing Lasers, which is one of the best shooters of all time. And they made Ghostbusters for the Sega Genesis, which is another game that is incredible. Ghostbusters for the Sega Genesis is like a Mega Man clone, but it's really good. It's a really good game.
Yeah, I'll say the Master System version of Ghostbusters, like everyone like makes fun of like the Nintendo one for how bad it is. Like the Master System version is still not a great game, but it fixes a lot of the problems the Nintendo one had, and that's actually a childhood game that I liked quite a bit when I was growing up. The Master System version of Ghostbusters.
So other games that they made, they were very well known for, as I said, shooters. I've been mentioning them. Gunnak. They also made Musha for the Genesis. But their biggest game, by far, is Puyo Puyo, which is one of the best puzzle games of all time. And it's still being made into different forms. It's kind of like akin to Tetris in its legacy and how good it is. But Puyo Puyo is a very good game.
Mm. So
I'm also known as Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine in the U.S.
And Kirby's Avalanche on the Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
So quasi-puzzle games, and we're here to talk kind of about a quasi... Well, not a quasi-puzzle game, but definitely a puzzle game.
Tell me about Gojira-kun, a.k.a. Godzilla, for the Game Boy.
So I guess
our first Game Boy game, by the way, on the podcast,
which is a
huge fault of ours to not have a Game Boy game until our 102nd entry on the endless list.
Well, you know, we were talking about in other episodes how we're lacking puzzle games. So I guess this is kind of like a 2-for-1 deal where we get a puzzle game as well as a Game Boy game. So like we already kind of established, Gojira-kun, or just for the sake of making more recognizable for the podcast, I'll just say Godzilla-kun, came out December 18th, 1990 in Japan. At that point in time in Godzilla's history, the Godzilla franchise had been rebooted in the 80s and was experiencing a little bit of a resurgence. So in 1990, two Godzilla movies had already come out, Godzilla 84 / Godzilla Returns, as well as Godzilla vs. Biollante, which came out in 1989. But this game, and its MSX prequel or port, however you want to call it, features only characters that were part of what's known as like the Showa series for the Godzilla franchise. And granted, Emperor Showa was still around until 1990, but for the purposes of the Godzilla franchise, the Showa period is considered to have ended in 1975 for the purposes of characters, movies, timelines. So the reason why there's so many Showa monsters that star with Godzilla in this game is because this was kind of supposed to be a product, or video game was supposed to be part of a product line called the Monsterland series. It was a merchandise, or sorry, Godzilla Land merchandise line, which was geared primarily towards like children and young adults, although it did have products that was supposed to appeal to all people. It started in 1984 and ran through the 90s, and it basically kind of took that 70s Godzilla aesthetic, made like educational products or more like kind of cutesy anime style, I don't want to, like, OVAs and stuff like that. They're kind of meant to appeal to everybody. So originally, when the MSX version was coming out in 1985, it originally was going to be called Godzilla Land, but at the last moment, Toho, who is the studio that Godzilla belongs to, pulled that Godzilla Land branding back and instead decided to go with Godzilla-kun or Gojira-kun. So that is kind of where it was kind of coming off of from like a merchandising standpoint. But when it comes to the game itself, the game is a puzzle game where the goal is to essentially break a bunch of rocks in a certain particular order to clear a level. And these rocks are, in elevated areas, going to reach to by vines. And you have to kind of, like, and Godzilla can't jump. All Godzilla can do is walk left or right, climb up and down a vine. So sometimes you have to stack these rocks in a certain way to kind of, or boulders, to get to other boulders that you have to break. And while you are doing that, you're being harassed by a number of Showa-era monsters, which include Godzilla, Ghidorah, the Smog Monster, Mechagodzilla, Anguirus, Baragon, Rodan, and King Ghidorah. If you meander too long on a stage, King Ghidorah is the invincible monster that comes and kills you if you've taken too much time.
Yeah, it's like in Spelunky, if you in the first Spelunky, I think it's 2 minutes and 30 seconds. If you take longer than 2 minutes and 30 seconds, a ghost appears and will chase you down and kill you. Ghidorah is the same thing. But yeah, this is a puzzle game, right? So... yeah, this is a game just for people out there. If you run across it on emulation without any, you're just like, see Godzilla and you're like, oh, interesting. You're probably going to be disappointed because you probably won't even know what to do, because if you just turn this game on without even looking up what this game is, you'll have no idea what's happening.
This is a product of its time where people were expected to be reading instruction manuals, I think, before they dove into it, but...
Yeah, I turned it on once because you suggested it. I turned it on after I got it, and I was like, "What the fuck do I do with this game? You have to break all these blocks on the level, but there's no like indication that that's what you're supposed to do,
right? Yeah, at all. Yeah. So I guess to that point, my background with the game, as I think we established in these opening minutes here, that I'm a very big Godzilla fan. This was a game I had as a young child. I already had the American version as a young child. The artwork on the American version is like, it's like all these screen captures of Godzilla and all these monsters, like from the movies they appeared in. And I remember, like, this is one of those things I got my parents to buy when I was a kid to keep fueling my Godzilla addiction. It was like, oh my god, it's like, whatever this is going to be when I start playing it, it's probably going to be like Godzilla fighting all these monsters and cities and blah 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 blah. And and young me was like, what is going on here right now? Like, I'm breaking rocks and Godzilla doesn't shoot his atomic breath. He just has a giant fist that comes out of him.
But he does shoot his atomic breath eventually.
In the Japanese version, he shoots the atomic breath. So I think that's a good segue as to why I said we should play Godzilla-kun for the Japanese version as opposed to the American version. Maybe this probably has something to do with Godzilla-kun coming out 2 months after the American version. Maybe these enhancement games would. So in the American version, your goal is to save Mignola, the most unpopular character in all of the Godzilla franchise. In the Japanese version, you are not saving Mignola, you are saving Bajira, who is Godzilla's girlfriend, who exists in no other property outside of this game. And
really?
Yes,
I did not know that.
She is there's also like a number of like Godzilla family members that appear in like very brief cutscenes in this game that exist in no other media outside of this game.
So it's all chibi Godzilla stuff. So like the big head cutesy art style. Right. Do you know where that comes from?
So that artwork is based on Shinji Nishikawa, he's a manga artist, but he was again, taking it back to like that Godzilla Land merchandise line, he was the guy that for I think like 10 or 15 years was drawing these chibi super deformed style characterizations of Godzilla, and he's very heavily involved in a lot of the merchandising of the Godzilla franchise from the 80s to the 90s, and so a lot of this game's art, if it's not art done by him, it's art based on his work.
And he also was like the designer of King Ghidorah for Godzilla versus King Ghidorah. He has a lot of it in there. He did the storyboards for the Ultraman TV show that came out in 2013, Ginga, as well as Ultraman X that came out in 2015.
He's very heavily involved in like that sort of monster realm, but that's like his thing. He was just so his work is on so many pieces of Godzilla merchandise and kaiju-related merchandise through the 80s and the 90s. It's you just see it. It's very distinct, and you know it the second you see it.
Yeah, so in the U.S. version, as you said, there's like cool. There are cutscenes because we played the Japanese version. Yeah. In the Japanese version, after you beat certain levels, you'll get like a cutscene with some dialogue from one of Godzilla's family members in a chibi art style. In the U.S. version, there's no cutscenes, right?
So no, there's no cutscenes in the American version. There is no atomic breath power up in the American version. So that means the puzzles are different, and also the AI for the enemies is different in the U.S. version. The U.S. version, they're a little bit more pretty much like they come out of their chute and they just like kind of gun right towards you without any sort of like unique characteristics to them. Whereas like in the Japanese version, like Rodan will fly above you and then kind of wait to dive bomb you. Some will, like Anguirus, will wait to get in the same level as you, then charge at you. Mechagodzilla kind of does his own thing. Ghidorah is like the biggest one, which is like, in the American version, like, you cannot knock Ghidorah into a puddle of sludge. All you can do is just knock Ghidorah back, and you can't kill Ghidorah. Ghidorah, in the Japanese version, you hit... I'm going to say you hit her, because it's based on the Godzilla Land version of Ghidorah, which is a female. You're getting lots of deep trivia in this episode. And she'll turn into a puddle of sludge before she comes back, but you can bypass her. So that actually makes some of the puzzles that they didn't modify in the American version more difficult to complete, because you can kind of get stuck like in this kind of boulder Ghidorah. I won't call it a glitch, but like you can kind of get stuck in this situation where if you went things about the wrong way, like you just get stuck with Ghidorah between a wall and a boulder, and Ghidorah will just take all your power away before you can complete the puzzle. Whereas there's a means to bypass in the Japanese version.
So it's really interesting, this game. It's like a single screen where you have to break all the blocks. It's a puzzle game, and you have to break blocks in a specific order. You have to go up on platforms, push them down, push them on top of each other, and then break all of the blocks to complete the level. But the thing that's the twist in this game that we can talk about if it works or doesn't, but there are 64 levels in this game. They can be completed in a lot of different ways. It's basically what they call in the American version the Matrix Labyrinth, which is a 8x8 grid with the 64 levels, and some levels you can progress in up or down, left or right. You don't have to go in a linear fashion through this this game. There's a certain path through the maze and through the screens that you have to get to the end of the maze. And the end of the maze is different in the North American and Japanese versions.
Or the location, And actually, the final level between the two is different as well. In the American version, actually, the final level is you punch one block left, you punch one block right, you have completed the game. There's an actual puzzle for the Japanese version. But so that, I think, getting into the gameplay, I think we kind of covered the heart of the gameplay, but this finer point of, like, it's not just solving these puzzles. Like, it's not like a low game where it's like you're just doing a puzzle and you move on to the next level and complete it. It's after you clear all the boulders, you get 1 to 2 arrows, or I think in some 3 arrows, of like which direction in the labyrinth where you can go. And so your goal is to find whichever room is the room that is holding either Mignola or Bajira in it, which, again, the location is different between the American and Japanese version. But, like, if you go down the wrong path, you can find yourself having to double back and repeat rooms you've already cleared until you find the right path to go. And, like, yeah, I mean, I did that too. And I will say, on one side, I think the puzzles are very well done. I think for a puzzle game, we're not talking about the most complex stuff on the planet, but I think for a puzzle game to, like, kind of pick up and play, I think it's very good. I find games like this to actually be very relaxing to play. And I think, like, having a good little aesthetic, all that stuff, I'm just saying all the good stuff up front. I love all that stuff.
Right.
But, like,
I'll say that. So for me, just before we get into the negative stuff, this game reminds me a lot of Donkey Kong for the Game Boy, the 1994 game, I think it was, or 93. That is, like, it has like 100 different screens. It's very good. It's a puzzle game, but also a platformer. When I just say Donkey Kong, people immediately flash to the 80s Donkey Kong. This game is, like, expanded upon that. There's a lot of different ways you can platform. There's a lot of different puzzles you have to complete. I think there's, like, something like 100 different levels in that game, or more than that. There's, like, a great boss at the end of it, which is, like, a giant Donkey Kong. There's worlds that you have to work through. It's a very, very good game, and I'm very excited to play that. It's my favorite Game Boy game, I think, of all time. But it reminds me of that. It's just, for me, what doesn't work is the fact that I don't like having to go through the same levels a million times. And then the second thing that doesn't work for me in this game is the enemies. I think the enemies are just thrown in there to make this game longer to beat. It's not like they're not necessary. They're just there to pad the length, I feel like.
Yeah, I think they serve two purposes, which I agree with you, like, you know, but I think what I think they serve is, one is fan service. I think the fact that, like, when Toho, who is
absolutely
so focused on merchandising, because, like, they were making money hand over fist over, they were making those 1980s to 1990s Godzilla movies, like, they all did very well financially, but they were making insane amounts of money off merchandising. So you say you have a Game Boy game that has these characters in it, it's going to sell that much more. And so I think that's primarily why they're there, but or at least the reason why they have to be there. But I do also kind of feel like they did a good job in a way, like, they kind of build, like, a little bit of stress, like, where you just can't, like, just sit there and try to figure out the puzzle, like, because you might be, like, being attacked by, like, these enemies that are there to sap your power away and, you know, make you hustle and stuff. But you figure out the puzzle, like, they kind of become a non-issue. Like, when you have to go back and repeat it, so.
I will say, you can, there's two ways to pause in this game, and one way to pause is just to stop everything. Another way is you can scan across the stage and see the whole stage and try to figure it out like that, and that's what I did most of the time. That's not to say I died a whole bunch, because a couple other good things about this game. There's a button where you can just kill yourself, where you can instantly start over, because you can get into a situation where you fucked up, and it's unlimited continues, so that you can just keep going. Also, you get a specific password to see to save your where your progress in the maze and where you're, what you've uncovered. And that is incredibly helpful if you want to beat this game in more than one session, even though the password is like a zillion characters long.
Well, there's two. There's like an 18-letter one, and there's a 4-letter one. The 18-letter one will save your will show your progress of the labyrinth that you've already cleared.
Right.
And the 4-letter one just takes you to the to where you're at. So,
right.
Would I like? Yeah, because like the annoying thing about this game, which I think we were just about to get into, is. When the labyrinth maze aspect turns you around and you start doing, you know, the same room over and over and over again. Even like when I was like a little kid playing this on my Game Boy, I like was annoyed by that very quickly. So I just made sure every time I went to a new room, paused, wrote the password down. The second I was getting turned around, I was like, all right, I'm just going to put the password in for where I could branch a different
very
level.
Very good idea.
And that's like... That makes your enjoyment of this so much more. Because I said Lolo is like a good example. Like I like these sort of games, like I find them relaxing. They aren't games I play for long periods of time. They're kind of pickup play for 20-minute games. And I think this kind of falls in like that kind of like Lolo style bucket, although Lolo is a much superior puzzle series.
Yeah, but way better. Way better game. One thing I will say about this game before we start talking about the ranking, which we should probably get into, I would imagine. I think this is a good point. Do you think?
Yeah.
So, okay. So I was looking at the cutting room floor of this game.
Okay.
Did you look at that
yes.
site?
Yes. Yeah. I love that site.
So there's a message to Nori that's if you enter a password and it says Nori. If you enter a password, this is what comes up. It's just a screen with text, and it says this. Nori, we have spent so many days together, and that now we understand each other very well. I tell you that you are the most attractive person I've ever met. I am so happy that I was born to meet you, and you love me, and I love you. There's also another one that is only in the international version that says, Dear Coates... How are you? I've been doing pretty fine. That you can see this message, but I'm sorry that I can't visit you yet. Please don't get angry. I never forget to keep trying to visit you, and I hope to see you soon. Maybe I will take my lover, Nori, with me. What the fuck is this shit?
So,
why is this in the game?
So I'm glad you brought that up, because I don't know, and I have lots of questions about that, and that's, like, a mystery that's, like, never really been, as far as I know, has not ever really been developed or explored, and I don't know if it ever will be, but that's, you know, you always kind of hear about, like, developers leaving messages in games and stuff like that as, like, you know, testing whatever, but
not like password accessible, right?
That is that's like really something right there. That's like a whole new level of bizarre stuff. Like, I mean, you know, I think the mystery of Nori is a I think that could be a whole podcast into itself that you know, will have to be explored one day. But yes, that's a very bizarre and borderline unsettling feature about this game that I am glad you brought that up.
So, where does this game go on the endless list of video games? Currently, it goes from Super Mario 64 all the way down to Jurassic Park Trespasser at number 101. It's our 102nd entry. Actually, yes, it's our 102nd entry on the endless list. I believe it's actually our 101st. If we get rid of our ranking from our destroyed podcast, but nevertheless,
it's not real till it happens.
We're gonna say that last week we added Tetris, or 2 weeks ago we added Tetris to the endless list at number 2. Where does this game fall?
Well, I guess we get two metrics to compare this to, right? We get to compare this to other puzzle games, and we get to compare it to the other Godzilla game we have done for this podcast.
I think the other Godzilla game is a better comparison at this point.
I think Godzilla to Godzilla is really what you do here. So Godzilla Save the Earth.
I would also say
no good.
Yeah, so Godzilla Save the Earth is number 76. We did that back in January of this year, 2020, which seems like a fucking lifetime ago. because 2020 has never ended and will never end. Personally, I don't think this game goes above Godzilla Save the Earth.
Yeah, you know, yeah, it's two very different things, right? You, oh my god, I almost said the forbidden phrase of the hard to compare things, right? But where I was going to with that, though, was mentally a little bit different than normally I remember this, because, you know, talking about Godzilla games as being the Godzilla fan that I am, look, it's... We gotta be honest, there's not a lot of great Godzilla games. There's a lot of Godzilla games. Very few are good. I would say there are three good Godzilla games at the end of the day. Maybe four. It's this, it's Godzilla Save the Earth, and it's the Godzilla Street Fighter clone for the Super Nintendo, which is pretty good.
That's a divisive one.
Yeah, I think, and then I think if, like, the next in line is probably the Godzilla NES, the Godzilla Monster of Monsters NES game, but I mean, really, that's more nostalgia than it actually being a good game. So I mean, really, I figured we'd be going to this kind of comparing this to Godzilla Save the Earth, and it's just do you like the arcadey fighty game better, or do you like the more puzzly Godzilla game better?
I like the arcadey fighty game better.
Yeah,
I think I have a better time playing that game.
I was gonna say the same thing. You know, I enjoyed replaying it for this pod, but at the end of the day, like, I'm gonna go back to Godzilla Saves the Earth as a Godzilla fan more than I'm going to go back to Godzilla Kun. I would say, though, I would like to play the MSX version because I like the fact that that has a level editor, and I wonder if, like, if you know, I like that in concept, as that, like, it'd be cool to play, like, custom levels that, you know, other folks had made. So, but other than that, I don't really have too much of a playing it. But, you know, yeah, I mean, you know, yeah.
You know, I really...
Sorry, go ahead.
I really want an MSX computer. I want one of those. But the problem is, like, I haven't done any research on what it outputs to a TV, so I don't know how it would work. And also, everything's in Japanese.
Yeah,
for a lot of the games, because like the one game that I really want to play on the MSX is the Metal Gear game, the original Metal Gear. Which is supposedly pretty good.
And is the MSX that got the true Metal Gear, like,
yeah,
the second one? Like, didn't that, like not Snake's Revenge, yeah, in the NES, but, like, whatever's supposed to be the true Metal Gear Solid 2.
Right.
For that period.
Yep,
of time.
Yep,
yeah.
Yep.
But anyway, back to the ranking. So, I don't know. Are you saying that you would put it right below Godzilla Save the Earth and have back-to-back Godzilla games?
Do you think this game is better than Pro Wrestling for the NES?
Yeah, because I mean, that's a fun game, but I like the kind of the pick up and play puzzles, you know, like, I like that aspect of it, like, but that's a personal taste thing, you know. They're not different, they're not very different in quality to me, but I do, okay, like, I like the relaxing nature of puzzle games like this. Of simple puzzle games like this. But that's...
For me, I don't think this game is better than Blades of Steel.
Actually, I was about to say, I was like, now I'm looking what's between Pro Wrestling and Godzilla Save the Earth, and yeah, Blades of Steel is a better game.
Right, yeah.
I would put it above... I would put it before Blades of Steel.
So, like, at number 79?
Yes.
I think that's a pretty fair spot for it.
Yeah.
One thing I'll say also on that Godzilla fighting game, I think I mentioned to this previously, but Giant Bomb has a ranking of fighters. They're ranking every fighting game ever. They've been doing it for about as long as we've been doing this podcast. I was not inspired by them when, because I think they started like literally when we started, mm-hmm. or maybe like a few months before. I didn't see it until a few months after we started. But they have on their list Godzilla, the fighting game that you like, the SNES version, as one of their last games on the ranking of fighters. And they have, I think, 90 games on that list.
Well, I mean, there's so many fighting games. I feel like being in a top 90 list is not a bad thing. You know, like I would take.
Well, they've only gone through 90 games so far. Oh, so. Wow. it's like the second worst game. But yeah, I don't know. It's divisive. We'll have to play that one soon.
I tell you, like I said in our offline group chat, like having discovered a lot of my Super Nintendo games recently, I played the Super Nintendo Mortal Kombat game, and then like playing that versus playing the Godzilla game, I was like, holy shit, one of these aged a whole lot better and it wasn't Mortal Kombat. But
as I said in our group chat, I like Mortal Kombat, the original one, still. I don't know.
It's good. I'm just saying
it's a different style of fighting game.
It is. It's just my issues were more, I was like, man, it's like, this is kind of stiff, and again, the Super Nintendo port is more of my complaints, where I was like, it's actually a little bit more sluggish than I remember. Like, I feel like the controls are a little delayed than what I, or not delayed, they're just not as tight as I remember them being as a kid. And I was like, ooh, it's like, this does not feel good in 2020, but.
I'm curious when we rank Mortal Kombat 2, where Mortal Kombat moves to, because we have our rule. What rule is that? Is that the Metroid rule?
Oh, wait, does that mean we get to move Godzilla Saves the Earth?
Well, technically, it's not really the same series, is it? It's got to be the same series. It's got to be in the same sequential order. It can't be just the same property.
Making the rules up on the spot, huh?
I think that makes sense.
What a theme of the night going on around here.
This is what we always do. Yeah. Make rules up on the spot.
No. I'm good with that, because there is an actual Godzilla Saves the Earth. Well, series, they have different names, but there's an actual trilogy of games there, so
cool.
That was easy.
are we good at number 79? We are
it
sounds like. Oh, cool. So we have a new number 79 on the endless list. Its name is Gojira-kun, also known as Godzilla in the U.S. Our first ever Game Boy game, and what a Game Boy game to choose on the podcast.
Well,
congratulations to, what should we put it on the list as, Gojira-kun or Godzilla? Or both?
Gojira-kun Kaiju Daikessen. Because the MSX version is just Gojira-kun.
Okay.
But I'd be remiss without saying that this episode is probably going to air, what, November 12th or 10th, I would say? When do episodes come out? On a Monday or a Tuesday here?
Tuesday morning.
Tuesday? Okay. So November 10th, this episode will drop. We'll just say November 3rd was Godzilla's 66th birthday. So this is kind of like the It's So Bad Godzilla birthday celebration episode. Godzilla turns 66 this month. There you go.
Wow. The fact that you know that.
Well, that's a big November really 3rd. Good. November 3rd is a big day in the Godzilla fandom. There was a Godzilla Online Festival hosted by Toho on November 3rd, where they didn't announce too much stuff, but it's a big day. Godzilla turns 66. There's a new anime coming out in April. A lot of new merch coming out to celebrate the anniversary. Opening of Godzilla stores worldwide. Very exciting time to be a Godzilla fan. Very exciting time.
Well, Chris, congratulations to number 79, Gojira-kun. You can follow us at It's So Bad Pod on Twitter. If you follow us on Twitter, you can find out if we're going to have an episode every week and why we didn't, because that's where you'll find that. You can also email us, itssobadpod@gmail.com. For any of your questions, comments, concerns, you want to provide your commentary, you want to tell us why we did a bad job on ranking things, all available for you at itssobadpod@gmail.com to email us. But we will hopefully be back next week with another episode, provided the world doesn't end and provided I don't lose a track on my podcast. And well, again, apologies.
I think at the time of this release, you already know the fate of the world. So,
yes, the world the fate of the world is still hanging in the balance as we record this, but we won't talk about that. Good luck to everybody out there. Godspeed. Hopefully you don't die. See you next week.
Goodbye.